Good afternoon and welcome to On the Docket. I'm your host, Patricia Salkin, Dean of Touro Law Center in Central Islip. Every Sunday at this time, we talk about current legal issues and how they affect you. Today on the docket, we're talking about special education law and advocacy. Special education laws give children with disabilities and their parents important legal rights. Special education law can be very complex and always changing, which is why it's important to know your rights. Our guests today plan to teach us more about the law, what rights you're entitled to, and what kinds of assistance exist to support those with special needs. We're joined by Ed Nickwitz, a Touro Law Center alum and senior counsel at the Sanders Law Firm, one of the most successful and innovative personal injury law firms in New York. Ed concentrates in the representation of personal injury plaintiffs in matters arising from general negligence, medical malpractice, and product defect. He also has a continued concentration in education law, representing families in CPSE and CSE meetings, which we'll explain what those are, impartial hearings, and special education litigation as a parent advocate and or attorney. Ed's a trustee of the South Huntington Union Free School District Board of Education and is greatly involved on multiple boards and committees of various special needs organizations on Long Island. We're happy to have you with us here today, Ed.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us today is Eileen Buckley, supervising attorney at the Long Island Advocacy Center. She's a graduate of Adelphi University School of Social Work and Villanova University School of Law. Through a grant from the Suffolk County Department of Probation, she works with families who are brought into probation for PINS diversion. Eileen also has an office at the Public Advocacy Center at Touro. In addition, she's a member of a recently formed trauma task force created to try to bring trauma-sensitive practices to schools. Welcome to the show, Eileen.
Thank you.
Let's begin, Ed, with you. Can you give listeners an overview of what exactly special education law entails?
Sure, it'd be my privilege. We have, for many years, I always caution people, special education is not a place. It's not a room. It's not a hallway or a wing of a school. Special education is really a continuum of specially designed instruction, including supports and services designed to meet children with special needs, to meet their unique needs. Children with special needs are given an opportunity under our special education laws to pursue their education goals with the supports in the least restrictive environment.
So how would parents start the process to secure special education services for their child?
It really begins with something called a referral. And a referral can be from a number of different sources, but it includes the parents. And once a parent suspects that their children may be struggling or may have some difficulties or special needs, it's as simple as writing a letter to the school district. Writing a letter to the school district is asking for that child with special needs to be evaluated, to see what their needs are, to see how their needs could be met, and to forward that child's education program onto a committee for special education.
Okay, so I want to come back to the Committee on Special Education in a couple of minutes, but Eileen, what kinds of services exist and how can you get these services for your child in addition to following the referral process that Ed just described?
Well, once you refer the student to the Committee on Special Education, the committee is required to do evaluations. And the evaluations are required to be in all areas of suspected disability. So the parent gets to have input into what they think is the child struggling with, and then the evaluations occur. The evaluations are what dictate what services the child's entitled to. And it's a good program in New York because the schools are required basically to give the child whatever they need to make progress. The legal standard is reasonably calculated to provide an educational benefit in the least restrictive environment. So what that means is each child's entitled to a program that's uniquely tailored to meet their specific needs.
And so you mentioned that the schools are required to give children what they need in order to make progress. Who's evaluating what the progress is, and what do you do as a parent if your child is not progressing in school, in your opinion, despite having special education services?
Well, that's a good question because parents have a big role in making sure that their students are getting the services they need. And each student who is classified as a student with a disability gets something called an individualized education plan. And on that plan, there are goals that the student's supposed to be striving to meet. And what the parent really needs to be aware of is that they need to keep keep on top of knowing whether their student is making progress towards those goals. And they're entitled to ask for data. They're entitled to ask for new meetings. They're always entitled to ask for a new CSE meeting. And they're always entitled to ask for more evaluation. So if they're concerned that this student is not meeting their goals, they should question that and ask for new meetings.
And so, Ed, can you describe what the Committee on Special Education is?
Sure. The Committee on Special Education is a collection of people who have input into the child's special education program. And as Eileen referred to, the IEP is the contract that that student has with the school district. It outlines, for example, the IEP outlines their present levels of education and social-emotional performance, measurable goals, as we talked about, and program recommendations or related services. It also includes how they could participate in general ed classes, participation in testing, test accommodations, modifications, things of that nature. Essentially, it's your contract. This is your contract to provide of the agreed-upon services that the committee develops for your child to make that progress. Now, the committee includes, most importantly, in my humble opinion, the parent. I tell parents all the time, you are the most important person at that table. It can be overwhelming because included at that table are members of the school district administration, a child's special education teacher or potential special education teacher, a general education teacher, a school psychologist, evaluating professionals, and as a parent, as a lay parent, it can be somewhat intimidating to be at that table for the first time hearing shorthand terminology for things that we're just not accustomed to hearing. But it's most important, I tell parents, that you recognize that you are the most important person at that table, and it's important for you to ask questions. Stop the conversation and ask questions.
And of course, at the beginning of some of these processes, oftentimes the parents may be frustrated because they may not know what exactly is the diagnosis and what is the best way to help the child.
And I can speak to that on two levels, only because I'm a parent of a child with special needs, which is how I got involved in representing people in special education. And there is a frustration because we know there's something that is atypical about our children, and we want our child to progress. We struggle between recognizing that there might be a deficit or a special need and providing the support to the child in getting that. School districts, and as I said, as you mentioned, I'm on the school board. School districts, we hold special education committee meetings for many students. And sometimes I remind people in the school district, stop and remember that that parent may be at their very first Committee on Special Education meeting and needs to have things spelled out for them.
And so parents are provided, though, with a piece of paper about Know Your Rights, and they are legally provided with a copy of the statute or the regulations if they can understand what it is.
They are. Parents are required to have a prior written notice of their due process rights, and it's a legal document which is supposed to be provided before the meeting, sets forth if they disagree with the committee, what steps they could take. And it's also important for them to understand that the committee itself doesn't vote. There's a consensus at that table, and the parents' voice is as strong and as important as any voice at that table. If they disagree, there are steps to take.
All right, so let's go there. So you talk about the goal is to end the meeting with a consensus or to continue the meeting, but what happens if there is no consensus, or the consensus is that all of the school personnel believes one way, the parent believes the other way, but it's written up the way the school personnel says it should be?
The parent has due process rights, and what we say is they file for impartial hearings. Filing for an impartial hearing, it sounds intimidating. It's simply a request of the school district that they appoint somebody, an impartial hearing officer, to hear the matter. Before you proceed to that formalized process of sitting down with an impartial hearing officer, the parties may agree, if they both agree, to mediation. Well, they sit down in a room with a special education administrator from the school who's authorized to reach a resolution, and they try to resolve it there. Knowing that the parents disagree to such an extent that they're going to proceed towards an impartial hearing.
So one of the things that you and Eileen also mentioned was that you're entitled to have evaluations done of your child. And what happens if you disagree with the evaluations that are done by the school district?
Well, in instances when you disagree with the evaluation of the school district, you can request that the school district conduct another one, a separate one, an independent evaluation separate from the one that was conducted upon the initial referral. And I strongly urge parents to get private evaluations. But if you disagree with the school district's evaluations, you can ask that they conduct another independent evaluation.
And if the parents get a private evaluation, do they have to pay for that?
They do. And it's something that will be considered by the committee, not necessarily accepted. It's important to have it because it gives the parents their own roadmap, separate and apart from that which the school district would start.
Right. And that of course, is important information for the parents to know. I want to thank you, Ed and Eileen. Please stay with us because coming up, we'll continue our discussion on special education law. You're listening to On the Docket with Torah Law Dean Patricia Salkin on Long Island News 103.9. Welcome back to On the Docket. We are joined by Ed Nickwitz and Eileen Buckley discussing special education law and your rights. Eileen, before we took the break, we were talking about a special needs child's progress in school. There are some other challenges that these individuals can face. So what do you do if your child with a disability is suspended from school?
Well, that's actually a pretty complicated question because there's several parts. A child can be suspended, all children at school can be suspended by a principal for 5 days or less if you're talking about an out-of-school suspension. So there are different rules for that than if they're suspended for more than 5 days, which can only be done by a superintendent. If they're suspended for 5 days or less and the principal's proposing an out-of-school suspension, it's important for the parents to understand that they're entitled to written notice of this proposed suspension within 24 hours. They have to receive that. And in that notice, they are told that they're entitled to request an informal conference with the principal. And I think this is an important part of your rights because at that principal's conference, you have an opportunity to question witnesses who have information about what your child's accused of. And also, it's your opportunity to tell your side of the story and to ask that any punishment, if there is a finding that this child did what he was accused of, that the punishment not be an out-of-school suspension. You have the opportunity to ask for an alternative to an out-of-school suspension. I think out-of-school suspensions are very dangerous and harmful to children, so especially children with disabilities. So it's important to argue and explore all avenues that would keep the student in school. If the student is suspended and referred to the superintendent for a long-term suspension, there are even more due process rights, which entail a hearing, a full fact-finding hearing. And if your student has a disability, you're entitled to a part of the hearing that investigates whether or not the behavior is part of the disability. It's called a manifestation determination meeting. At that manifestation determination, there's going to be a discussion and an investigation into whether the behavior that the school is attempting to punish your child for is a part of their disability. And if it is found that it's a manifestation, they're not allowed to give them an out-of-school suspension generally. There are exceptions for weapons, drugs, and serious bodily injury. So it's not an unlimited provision, but there is a protection for students with disabilities. And then the third part of the hearing would be to decide what the punishment should be, the dispositional part. So it's pretty complicated. You're entitled to bring an attorney to the superintendent's hearing, and you have to have an opportunity to tell your side of the story.
So on the superintendent's hearing, though, that's even if it's just if it's a suspension meted out by the principal as opposed to the superintendent as well.
Well, the principal can only suspend for 5 days, and if they decide they want it longer, they have to refer it to the superintendent, and then the superintendent can suspend longer.
Right, but even on the 5 days or less, there still is parents are entitled to a hearing.
Well, they're not entitled to a hearing for 5 days or less. They're entitled to an informal conference with the principal. So it's informal, and it's in the principal's office.
And is that before or after the suspension begins?
That's supposed to happen before the suspension begins.
And one other question on the manifestation issues. Shouldn't that kind of information be part of the IEP or have been discussed at CSE meetings?
Well, if a student has behaviors that interfere with their learning, that should be on their IEP as part of their program. There's something called the Behavior Intervention Plan and the Functional Behavioral Assessment that could be part of their IEP to prevent behaviors from occurring. And the IEP is looked at the manifestation determination.
Right. And lastly on this, how do you keep your student out of the juvenile justice system if they're being suspended for some of the things you mentioned, like potential criminal behavior, drugs, weapons, and so forth?
Right. That's why the principal's conference is important. There are certain school districts that have, a policy to call the police, and we've been working hard to change some of that. It's difficult because some schools still follow a zero-tolerance sort of policy where they feel they have to call the police, but the principal does have the power to not call the police in certain situations, and then they can deal with it through the suspension through the superintendent. Schools also access the juvenile justice system through the PINS program for behaviors that they may or may not be suspended for, but for incorrigible behaviors and truancy. And those cases go to PINS diversion. And unfortunately, what I'm seeing a lot of are students that are referred to the PINS diversion program for problems that probably could have been addressed in the school without going to juvenile justice if they had been addressed earlier. So the recommendation to keep students out of juvenile justice, probably in both instances, is to address problems early, to insist that school districts evaluate students in all areas of disabilities, especially behavior problems and emotional and social problems. Schools often don't do psychiatric evaluations when they're required and they're necessary. We find a lot of the kids coming through the PINS diversion program have mental health problems that haven't been addressed, and we recommend that parents request psychiatric evaluations through the school district, which they can do. Most districts have a CSE meeting to determine whether that's appropriate. Even outside of special education, you can ask for things like counseling and other pre-referral services to address some of these problems, the behavior intervention plan, and other kinds of things that might help the student learn skills that they need to prevent bad behaviors so that they don't need to be suspended or referred to juvenile justice.
And so, Eileen, you and Ed have both mentioned a lot of process, due process, a lot of interaction with the court system. Ed, when would or should a parent hire an attorney?
In my mind, the time to hire an attorney is the time that you've had that disconnect where you're not understanding necessarily the process that's going forward. Sometimes parents and school districts just have a communication breakdown. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a personality conflict. But whatever the divide is, it causes a communication breakdown where one side just simply doesn't understand the goal of the other side. I think a lot of times attorneys can help in two ways. One, to help the parent better understand the process and interpret some of the matters that are going forward, and also to help the school district understand where the parent's coming from. I think as a education advocate who has a child with special needs, I think that's something that I pride myself on, because sometimes school districts at that table, they may not necessarily fully appreciate where the parents are coming from. If there is a suspension, if there is a long-term suspension, particularly when there's a child with special needs, I think it's urgent to consult an attorney to consider what to present in a manifestation hearing, in a suspension superintendent's hearing, because you want to make sure that your child's rights are well protected. And sometimes as a parent, it's difficult to divorce yourselves from the emotion in order to become a good advocate.
Right. So, Eileen, can you tell us about the Long Island Advocacy Center and more about the services that they provide in this area?
Sure. Long Island Advocacy Center is a nonprofit that serves all of Long Island. We have an office in New Hyde Park and one in Hopog. And as you mentioned, I have an office in the PAC Center at Toro. And I also have an office in the probation department to work with the PINS diversion program. What we do is educational training. We do direct advocacy. We do direct representation. We do records reviews, information and referral. We represent families in suspension hearings. And we do have programs for the PINS and the AFI, Alternative for Youth Program, and the Juvenile Delinquency Program. So we're hoping to, our mission is to empower parents to know what their legal rights are and to help students achieve their potential in no matter what their disability.
Yeah, so Ed, I want to go back to what advice you have as a parent who's been through the process, as a parent who is also serving on a school board. You've got multiple perspectives going here, and I guess I agree with what you said about sometimes the parent can't always be the best legal advocate for themselves, because I've been in that exact same situation as well, and I've even hired an attorney to help me for the CSD process.
I think the best tip I can give parents is this. We sometimes sit at a table when there's a discussion in an arena that we are not necessarily fully familiar with. And I tell parents that my favorite advocacy person is Detective Columbo. Don't be afraid to ask questions and be the dumbest person at that table if it means you best understand what's going on.
That's great advice, because, of course, at the end of the day, when the meeting ends, the parents have to go home with the child, and the child is often frustrated because they're not capturing what's going on at school. And as the child gets older and they're invited to attend the meeting, they often don't like all of the adults talking around them about their issues or their challenges. So it can be very frustrating. Well, that wraps it up for us here on The Docket. Eileen and Ed, thank you both for joining us. And thank you all for listening. Don't forget to join us again next week for On the Docket. The show airs every Sunday at 4:30 on Long Island News 103.9. I'm Patricia Salkin, Dean of Touro Law Center. Have a great week.